According to the authorities in Beirut, more than 2,700 Lebanese civilians have also been killed and over 1 million displaced since the Israeli aggression against the country began. Let's take a listen to Andrea Tenenti, UNIFIL spokesperson, regarding the situation.
Despite increasing challenges and IDF demands to move from position close to the blue line, we continue to monitor and report on what is happening on the ground, mostly from our observations, posts and positions, as most patrols have been suspended until things improve. Since the 1st of October, UNIFIL has recorded over 30 incidents resulting in damage to UN property or premises or injuring to peacekeepers. About 20 of those we could attribute to IDF fire or actions, with 7 being clearly deliberate. In an incident yesterday, a rocket likely fired by Hezbollah or affiliated group, its UNIFIL headquarters in Nakura, and setting a vehicle workshop on fire, with some peacekeepers suffering minor injuries. At this point, of course, we are concerned about all the attacks against peacekeepers and the continued shelling that we see from both sides. We continue to remain in our positions. We remain in the south of Lebanon, monitoring the situation and reporting to the Security Council. So our activities have been definitely challenged. Despite the very tense situation, UNIFIL continues to stay in contact with Lebanese and Israeli authorities, urging de-escalation. Our message to them is clear: recommit to Resolution 1701, in action and not just words.
More civilians are killed in Gaza as the Israeli military presses ahead with its air and artillery strikes across the blockaded territory. In Beit Lahia, Israeli drone attacks and artillery fire killed over a dozen people and injured many others. Beit Lahia, northern Gaza, has been the focal point of Israeli strikes in the past several weeks. The Israeli shelling of a market in Gaza City's Sheikh Radwan neighborhood killed nearly 10 people while injuring around 20 others. The Israeli aggression on Gaza began in October of last year. Since then, more than 43,100 Palestinians have been killed and over 101,000 others injured. The regime's forces have killed 102 Palestinians and injured 287 others in the past 24 hours alone. Abu Bakr Abid is joining us now live from Deir al-Bala in central Gaza to bring us up to speed on the ongoing Israeli genocidal massacres that are continuing across Gaza as we speak. Abu Bakr.
Yes, the Israeli military is pressing hard with its annexation and ethnic cleansing plan in the north of Gaza. So far, for more than 25 days, more than 1,200 people have been killed there. Just early in the morning in northern Gaza, Kamal Adwan Hospital, the third floor there, has been targeted. 4 people were killed. A dozen others were wounded, including 4 of the healthcare staff. This healthcare staff we're talking about is just about a few doctors and nurses, as the detention of more than 30 healthcare professionals has impeded the hospital from continuing its work, treating a lot of patients, a lot of war-wounded people inside the hospital. At the same time, in Beit Lahia, more people, thousands of people, are forced to flee their shelters following the non-stop shelling and bombing there. They remain without shelters, without water, without food, without anything, and you don't know where to go. At the same time, just like a few hours ago, 2 people were killed in the same area and several others were wounded. Moving a little bit to West Gaza City, where Al Yarmouk area was targeted, 4 people were killed, more than 10 people were maimed at the same time. This area we are mentioning is an open market area where people would gather to bring anything, to bring barely the little to feed their kids and to feed their families. Unfortunately, targeting them makes it incredibly difficult for a lot of people and thousands of families to deal with the current situation, with the disastrous situation unfolding across Gaza. So it's incredibly hard breaking in the north, and it continues. The area there continues without food, without supplies, without any medical aid, and people are still on the streets. Bodies are still on the streets, and they can't be retrieved following the full encirclement of the northern Gaza and Israeli quadcopters and Apache helicopters, as well as the drones continue shooting dead many civilians passing by, and no one, no ambulances, no civil defense workers, as all hospitals have been run out of service, all the ambulances and even the civil defense can't deal with any of these bodies remaining on the street. Moving here to central Gaza, where we are at the moment, the northwestern parts of central Gaza, namely on the Sayrat refugee camp, have been heavily pounded over the past few hours. We are talking about more than 8 Israeli tanks, bombs have hit the areas there. And also we understand the Israeli army is trying to reinforce its presence there in the northwestern parts of the central Gaza. Near Al-Nusayrat refugee camp along Al-Rashida Street, there has been an attempt at invading that area early in the morning, but Israeli troops then withdrew. Also in central Gaza at the same time, one woman has succumbed to her injuries today in the morning. She was transferred here at the hospital and she passed away. The good news that there have been 76 trucks that were allowed yesterday to enter the strip from Karma Salem crossing that really gave a fresh breath of air for millions of people being starved at the moment. But unfortunately, Rafah and Khan Yunis, places there continue to be heavily targeted and struck. There in Rafah, quadcopters and Apache helicopters continue shooting civilians, continue shooting at and continue opening fire at different tents and tented camps there. But the 76 trucks between goods and medical aid, as well as some food aid for millions of people trapped and stranded in here, will give like a new life for them because they've been starved for the past 25 days. And we hope that some of the supplies that reached the Gaza Strip, that reached the southern Gaza Strip, will reach the northern Gaza. But the Israel army doesn't allow the entry of these supplies to North Gaza, because we need to understand that the south is a microcosm of the north. The situation here is terrible. There it's hellish, but both areas, the entirety of the Gaza Strip is still under Israeli constant bombings, is still facing and going through an unprecedented level of famine. And yes, a lot of people remain without medications, lots of people remain without any shelters, especially out of the winter, because winter will really cause a great deal of pain and panic for thousands of people stranded in unprotected shelters and tents.
All right, thanks a lot. That was Dawood Bakrava joining us from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Well, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Palestinian territories has called for the suspension of Israel from the United Nations over the war on Gaza. Francesca Albanese also calls out the U.S. as an enabler of the genocide of Palestinians.
Based on my findings over 5 months of investigation, there were reasonable grounds to believe that Israel had committed acts of genocide in Gaza. What is striking in the case of Israel is that there is a cohort of states who echoes and reverberates what Israel says and does, and there is an army of minions at work produced literally fabrications that have one and only one objective: to distract the attention from where it should stay. It's surely unique in the determination, the protractedness of this conduct, and the fact that Israel has never faced any consequences. And indeed, I do believe that the impunity that has been granted to Israel has allowed it to become a serial violator of international law, which is the reason why I recommended that this is the time for the General Assembly to consider the suspension. I mean, recommending the revision or the suspension of Israel's credentials as a member of the United Nations. I have the same shock that you have looking at how the United States is behaving. It's not that the United States is simply an observer. The United States is being an enabler in what Israel has been doing.
Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids on cities and towns across the occupied West Bank. The regime's forces opened fire on Palestinians protesting against the raids, leaving several of them dead. They also abducted some people from refugee camps. Our correspondent, Nahra Hamid, joined us earlier from the city of Ramallah to give us an update on the situation in the occupied territories.
From Tul Kerem, as the IOF is still raiding the city and the two of its refugee camps, Nur Shemes refugee camp and Tul Kerem refugee camp, is still being raided for many hours now. And from the hours of midnight, the IOF started an operation against Tul Kerem and its refugee camp. Starting off the most recent development over there, the Ministry of Health, the Palestinian Ministry of Health, just announced that two Palestinians were assassinated. Ahmed Sahmawi and Abdel Aziz Abu Samen were assassinated by a drone attack inside Nur Shemes refugee camp. And after that, many vehicles and bulldozers and soldiers were seen going to the refugee camp, performing a military operation over there. As we have spoke to eyewitnesses and sources inside Nur Shemes refugee camp, they have confirmed that the IOF is making a big destruction in the infrastructure of the refugee camp. Also, in the hours of the midnight, a special force infiltrated into Tul Kerem refugee camp, assassinated Hussein Malah, a Qassam brigade inside Tul Kerem, the head of the Qassam brigade inside Tul Kerem refugee camp, as have been announced by Al-Qassam brigades by a statement.
An investigative American journalist associated with the Gray Zone website, Jeremy Lofrido, in an exclusive interview, spoken about his ordeal following his detention by Israeli forces. Lofrido was detained in the occupied West Bank for his reporting on Iran's retaliatory operation against Israel and its impacts on the regime.
I'm Jeremy Lofrido for the Gray Zone in Israel, where last...
Jeremy Lofrido is an investigative journalist with the Gray Zone website who was arbitrarily detained days after his video exposed damage incurred by Iran's operation to Israeli military facilities, including Nevatim Air Base in the Negev Desert.
I drove 70 miles south to the highly sensitive Air Force installation, aiming to document the underreported and potentially embarrassing destruction.
Lofrido also traveled to Tel Aviv for his reporting, described what he saw in the streets near the Israel spy agency Mossad's headquarters after it was hit by Iranian ballistic missiles.
Using visual clues from footage circulating online, I set out to locate where the missile may have landed. I saw a heavily damaged SUV, its windshield shattered, debris and concrete caked into the vehicle. Further down, the scene unfolded. Destroyed vehicles, torn up asphalt, and a massive crater, roughly 30 feet wide, recently filled in with dirt. This information is missing from all Israeli media reports due to the fact it's been officially censored.
Lofrido says the charges against him included providing information to the enemy during wartime, which, if convicted, carries a minimum 25-year prison sentence and a maximum death sentence. He explained how he was detained and treated in the Israeli captivity.
On the afternoon of October the 8th, just days after my report on the Iranian missile strike was published, I was stopped outside a military checkpoint near Nablus in the northern West Bank. They tightly wrapped a cloth around my head as a blindfold, shackled my legs, handcuffed my wrists, and walked me into the back of a military truck. In custody, I was treated not like a journalist but as an enemy, a distinction that, for Israel, seemed irrelevant. I was held in solitary confinement, deprived of adequate food and water.
In Lofrido's idea, the courage threshold for investigative journalists in the occupied Palestinian territories has risen to an extreme level, and reporting truth means being willing to risk imprisonment or death. However, Lofrido says restrictions have proven ineffective in containing certain information, as Israelis can still access foreign publications. He says Israel has escalated its high-handed tactics, relying on threats of violence, incarceration, and even death to maintain its censorship regime. On October 20th, Lofredo, after spending days in solitary confinement, was informally deported to the U.S. Formal deportation would have required convicting him on terror charges. The journalist's case is still open in what it seems as a deterrent to ensure if he returned, Lofredo would face detention again. But Lofredo says he will continue reporting on Palestine from outside the occupied territories.
Moroccan police have clashed with demonstrators venting anger at French President Emmanuel Macron for his recent remarks against the Palestinian resistance. Protesters gathered outside a French consulate in the city of Dar al-Baida on Wednesday evening, denouncing Macron's anti-Palestine and pro-Israel stance. During his address to the Moroccan parliament on October the 29th, he characterized the Hamas movement as terrorist and barbaric while asserting Israel's right to self-defense. His remarks sparked outrage, with demonstrators chanting slogans such as "Macron is a liar" and "resistance is not terrorism." Pro-Palestine sentiment is on the rise in Morocco since the kingdom signed a U.S.-backed normalization deal with the Israeli regime. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Mother, don't cry for me, I'm heading off to war. God Almighty is my armor and sword. Palestine, forever Palestine. Children stones in the sky, they say to their parents, don't worry, God is on our side. Palestine, forever Palestine. Mother, don't worry when they come for us at night. Surely they'll be sorry when God puts them right. Tell me why they're doing what was done to them. And don't they know that God is with the oppressed and needy? He perished while the nations that rule through tyranny. Palestine, forever Palestine. Fighting for our lives, they say to their parents, we know that Palestine is our right. They say to their parents, we'll fight for what is right. They say not to worry, God is on our side. They say we'll die for Palestine, Palestine, forever.
Hidden Files.
Years ago, wars were fought with tanks, rifles, machine guns, chemical weapons, explosive devices, etc. Well, fast forward, and wars have gotten much more sophisticated. And at times, the most lethal weapon is intangible. From misinformation, media campaigns, to sanctions, the tools of war have changed to target nations and to cause upheaval from within first, and then add the more common hardware tools to the chest, like WMDs, IEDs, phosphorus bombs and missiles, and, you know, great technological advancement like those. Just as there are alleged rules to traditional warfare that are not followed, so are there alleged rules to this new form of warfare. Not targeting civilian populations and not inflicting collective punishment and not committing crimes against humanity. These are all nice concepts, which are not always followed. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today we will look at a form of war which many do not understand the effects of, sanctions, and especially the unilateral sanctions regime of the United States. According to the United Nations, sanctions are meant to be used as a last resort. It says it is a response to stopping extremism, curbing smuggling, and massive human rights violations. However, what has been the norm of the UN is that countries which are members of the Security Council are not sanctioned, and the sanction of others depends on the political and geostrategic interests of Security Council members. Well, the main sanction regime today comes from the United States and its unilateral sanctions. Washington sanctions a country and pressures other countries from dealing with the targeted sanctioned country, usually by economic threats or even worse. According to the United Nations, a proliferation of secondary sanctions has resulted in a growing fear of sanctions and overcompliance, leading to serious adverse effects on the human rights of millions of people around the world. Secondary sanctions are intended to prevent third parties, states, commercial entities, and individuals from trading with countries that are subject to sanctions issued by another country. We will talk about the legality of these unilateral sanctions a little bit later in this show.
Currently, a third of the world's population is affected by U.S. sanctions. Since 1990, the U.S. has imposed unilateral sanctions in over 20 countries. Countries that try to have independent policies from the United States are the most affected. Countries like Cuba, which has been on the U.S. sanctioned list for 61 years now. Iran, which was the most sanctioned country in history until the start of the Russia-Ukraine war. Iran has been on the U.S. sanctions list for 43 years, and now Russia is the most sanctioned country in the world. Then there is Venezuela, which has suffered for years from U.S. sanctions due to its revolutionary policies. According to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, 40,000 Venezuelans have died due to U.S. sanctions.
I'd like to welcome our first guest to the show.
Cindy Sheehan. Cindy Sheehan is a peace and social justice advocate who became internationally prominent after her son Casey was killed in Iraq in 2004. She set up a peace camp near then-President George Bush's vacation home in Crawford, Texas. She is an author and hosts The Soapbox on Substack.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Cindy. I'd like to hear your opinion on the way sanctions have been used to cause maximum pressure on countries and their populations.
sanctions are supposedly put in place because the United States, the State Department, the politicians, the media, you know, whatever, this big class of propagandists, they'll say that so-and-so is killing his own people, so-and-so is a brutal dictatorship, blah, blah, blah. And so the United States, they're, you know, and Cuba is a perfect example of this. There's been a blockade in Cuba almost as long as I have been alive. And they're supposedly placed there so the people will get so disadvantaged and so upset with their own governments that they'll rise up against their governments. But as you know, a victim living in a place where there's been really harsh sanctions, that's not exactly what happens, and it actually is harmful to the people. And I believe, and I've talked to many people in the countries that you mentioned, and I've been to Cuba many times, that it makes them stronger to stay firm against the empire, against imperialism, against neoliberalism.
Well, the irony of these U.S. sanctions is that the American people actually don't benefit from what their country is doing to others. So who's benefiting from this, Cindy?
The war profiteers, globalists, the capitalists, they're the ones that profit. But we've seen here in the United States that even though it was a slow march to the collapse of our economic system, here in the United States, especially since 2011, we've seen since the start of COVID, we've seen since the brutal sanctions put against Russia this year, that it is actually now starting to reflect here in the United States with gas prices and inflation, hyperinflation, the reduction of services, the crumbling of our infrastructure. So these sanctions are coming home to roost.
And any final comments that you have, Cindy, on this issue?
Many people are starting to wake up to that fact. And so while corporate media is collapsing, we're seeing the rise of alternative media and a rise of truth seekers. So there's still hope. And it's like talking person to person. I'm here in California at 8 o'clock in the morning. You're in Iran 10 and a half hours away from me. And we know, just like exposing the truth from real humans, real workers, real people who are experiencing, you know, the good and the bad and how we can work together for peace and for economic security and environmental sustainability for the entire world.
Oh, thank you so much, Cindy Sheehan, for being with us right here on Hidden Files.
One of the main messages broadcast about people, such as those living in Afghanistan, Venezuela, and Iran, is that they are suffering. We watch corporate media pump out story after story of the suffering of these people living in non-U.S. ally countries and tell how their pain, unlike that of people in Western countries, is the doing of violent criminals ruling their country without popular support. The part the media often entirely skips, however, is the role of the West in causing these issues. A role that can almost be summarized in a single word: sanctions. Sanctions are also known as unilateral coercive economic measures, which means that they are ways for, say, the U.S. to coerce governments of sovereign nations to give in to their demands. The U.S. has the power to do this because the petrodollar system gives the U.S. dollar elevated status as the dominant currency in the global economy. And due to its dominance, it can also punish other governments if they continue to do business with the targets of these coercive measures. In this way, American officials aim to either make the government of the target country obey them or make its people so desperate that they'll overthrow their government in hopes of improving their situation. and the U.S. has used this form of economic warfare since the 1950s on a host of different nations like North Korea, Cuba, Iran, Syria, Venezuela, and others. Some of the toughest of all sanctions have been imposed on Iran, and politicians like Rudy Giuliani have openly said they are working because they make the people suffer. The biggest victims of this economic terrorism are people with rare diseases who cannot access essential medicines because of these sanctions and often die as a result.
Well, let me welcome our next guest to Hidden Files.
Alfred Maurice de Zayas. De Zayas is an expert for civil and political rights and has published 9 books on a variety of legal and historical issues. He has been visiting professor of law at numerous universities, including the University of British Columbia in Canada, the Graduate Institute of the University of Geneva, the DePaul University Law School in Chicago, the Human Rights Institute at the Irish National University, Galway, and the University of Trier, Germany. At present, he teaches international law at the Geneva School of Diplomacy.
Oh, welcome to the program, Mr. de Zayas. Let's start off with your perspective on unilateral coercive measures, otherwise known as sanctions.
What must be clear to every listener is that sanctions kill. I mean, sanctions kill just as much as a bullet. Sanctions kill when you siege a town, like the Nazis siege Leningrad. That cost between 700 and 1 million human lives. Now, the sanctions that the United States has imposed on Venezuela are estimated to have cost, in the year 2018 alone, 40,000 deaths. Now, when you add all the deaths attributable to unilateral coercive measures against Cuba, against Nicaragua, against Venezuela, against Syria, against Iran, you're going to go into the hundreds of thousands of deaths. And this is not an exaggeration. UNICEF carried out an investigation of sanctions against Iraq back in the 1990s, and the estimate is that 500,000 children died because of the sanctions.
Wow, unbelievable. I mean, you say that sanctions are killing people. Can there be international legal measures taken against these sanctions?
In the light of worldwide deaths, certainly of more than 100,000 human beings directly attributable to United Nations sanctions, this is a matter for Karim Khan, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. This clearly falls under Article 7 of the Statute of Rome, the Statute of the International Criminal Court. That is the article on crimes against humanity. This is what has to be argued in the General Assembly. This is what has to be argued in the Security Council. This is what has to be argued at DESA and all other United Nations agencies. We already have the excellent reports of Alena Dohan. She is the UN Special Rapporteur on the adverse impact of sanctions, not only U.S. sanctions, also sanctions imposed by the United Kingdom and by Canada and by France and Germany, et cetera, et cetera. They all kill. And that is so important that the mainstream media pick up on this piece of news. As I say, my American friends know nothing about this. They know nothing about the fact that sanctions kill. They assume that sanctions are there for good reasons to persuade governments to cease violating human rights. So the hypocrisy of it, the, shall we say, the cynicism of it is mind-boggling. But that is the situation we are living in. So my appeal, which I make in my book, Building a Just World Order, is that this issue be before the International Criminal Court, But in the meantime, it can also go up to the International Court of Justice, because the General Assembly, if you get enough votes in the General Assembly, so majority plus one, you can adopt the resolution elevating the question, the legal question of the illegality of unilateral coercive measures under the UN Charter, and elevate it to the International Court of Justice for an advisory opinion.
Well, what do you think the overall goal is for Washington and its sanctions regime?
Our government, there is what we term the deep state. And the deep state is made up of the military, industrial, digital, financial complex. Essentially, they call the shots. And they're making money. They're making plenty of money with war. They're certainly making a lot of money with the Ukraine war. And they're certainly making a lot of money with the sanctions. So the sanctions is a way, for instance, to prevent countries to do free trade and to buy cheaper where they can in the world. What sanctions have done, and people don't seem to realize it, sanctions have upturned, frustrated, subverted the benefits of globalization. Sanctions have essentially destroyed globalization and the supply chains and everything that goes with it, so that the United States, by weaponizing the dollar, is trying to impose on the rest of the world the U.S. imperial wishes. And as I said, I'm an American citizen, but I think like Noam Chomsky or like Jeffrey Sachs or like Dan Kovalik or Francis Boyle or Stephen Kinzer, who just abhor the weaponization of human rights actually to hurt people. And that exactly is what we're doing, but that with the complicity of the mainstream media, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, CNN, Fox, and the others.
What can be done to counter these measures?
Until we realize that we are being lied to day in, day out, and that we are in the United States, in Canada, in the United Kingdom, in France, in Germany, in Switzerland, we won't be able to make any progress. So what can we do? Certainly give it publicity in the General Assembly, certainly give it publicity in the Security Council, appeal to UNICEF to carry out an investigation of the deaths attributable to sanctions, appeal to the WHO to carry out an investigation of deaths attributable to lack of access to medicine. Similarly, an appeal to the Food and Agriculture Organization, and then elevate the issue to the International Court of Justice. Is this a crime against humanity? Does this amount to a violation of Article 7 of the Statute of Rome? I have no hesitation to say that it does.
Well, do you think that these unilateral sanctions help to create an alliance between those countries which have been sanctioned?
The mindset in Washington is still the mindset of the unipolar world. And the United States just simply is striking right and left and imposing sanctions and intimidating countries and actually engaging in terror against governments, and has an enormous responsibility, both civil responsibility and criminal responsibility, for the consequences of those sanctions. But there again, that is what I say, and what Richard Falk says, and what Jeffrey Sachs says. But that is not what you're going to read in the New York Times and in the Washington Post. And thus far, I don't see the American media changing. I see the American media as the spokes, as the spokesperson, as the sounding board of the Pentagon and the sounding board of the State Department. So don't expect any level of self-criticism inside the established media. You can read very good analysis in the so-called alternative media.
Are there any final comments you have on this, Mr. DeZayas?
You will see that there's plenty of Americans who think like I do. On the other hand, none of us is in a position of power. None of us is in a position that we can actually influence policy. And we can write our articles and write our analysis and hope that some people who are in a position of power will say, that makes sense. Why not try that? Why not shift? Why not try a different paradigm than the unipolar paradigm that we now have?
Well, thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files, Mr. Alfred DeZayas. As many countries continue to be affected by the sanctions regime, there's growing solidarity between many of the targeted countries and increased cooperation between them. These nations have had to be resilient and had to count on their own ingenuity to survive and, for many others, even thrive during these sanctions. And now it appears that the pendulum of global power is swinging and it is heading towards the east. This should be a very interesting journey, and Hidden Files will keep you informed during this process. Well, it has been a pleasure being with you on this episode of Hidden Files, and hopefully you will join us next week. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be asking a very significant and important question. And that question is related to a subject concerned with one of the principal components of our faith. I'm speaking of the hereafter. And specifically, it is about the entrance into paradise. Every human being wants to enter paradise, wants to go to heaven. In this connection, everybody asks, what can I do to enter heaven? What are the requirements of somebody who wants to enter heaven and paradise? In this connection, we can take inspiration from the Quran and Hadith in order to find out what the requirements are for entering paradise. By way of example, in one verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following. God says, "And whoever does righteous deeds, whether male or female, such shall enter paradise, and they will not be wronged so much as the speck of a date stone." So in this beautiful Quranic verse, we see that the criterion for entrance into paradise is the performance of righteous deeds. In another Quranic verse, we also read the following. "This is the paradise we will give as inheritance to those of our servants who are God-weary." In this beautiful verse, God says that the requirement for entering paradise is piety. So these two, somebody might say that these two verses complement one another. One of them says that one should be pious and refrain from evil actions, protect oneself from bad actions. The other one says that one should perform good actions. One of them is kind of negative, the other is positive. These two are requirements for entering into paradise. These are general requirements. In a similar verse, in a similar way, the Holy Prophet has also been narrated as having said the following. This prophetic hadith, it kind of summarizes what both verses of the Quran stated. The Prophet said, "The most effective way my community will enter paradise is through God-wariness and good character." Also, the Holy Prophet said, "Whoever meets Allah with three things will enter paradise from any door he likes. Good character, fear of Allah." These are the two things that were mentioned in those two verses, as well as that hadith of the Prophet that we mentioned. However, in this hadith, the Prophet elaborates on this a little more. He says, "In public as well as in solitude." So, you know, one's piety and one's good actions, they should be true in all situations, both when a person is alone as well as when he is out in public. And finally, the Prophet, to this he added, "And desisting from disputation, even when in the right," refraining from arguing with somebody, even though one might be, entitled to, and one might be correct. If one refrains from arguing with the person, this is a good indication that the person can enter paradise. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the requirements for entering paradise in the light of the Quran and Hadith. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program, The Key, an IRIB English radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
For my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, now I offer my son to you. See, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still my roots, Palestine. lullaby, my child, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Sit somebody inside my aching heart, summer deep inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Hezbollah resistance movement targets more military bases and settlements with rockets and drones while forcing the regime's aircraft to leave Lebanon's airspace. More civilians fall victim to the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza as the regime keeps pounding the displaced Palestinians with air and artillery strikes. And an American journalist detained recently in the occupied West Bank narrates his ordeal in Israeli captivity. Welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story, the Hezbollah resistance movement continues to confront invading Israeli forces while striking the regime's military sites and settlements with rockets and drones. In one of its latest operations, the movement said it has fired a barrage of rockets and artillery shells at a group of Israeli soldiers in the southern Lebanese town of Khiyan. Hezbollah has also targeted four settlements in the northern occupied Palestinian territories with rockets. Rocket sirens were reportedly sounded in several settlements. According to media reports, thousands of mobile phone lines have also been disrupted in the occupied territories. Some outlets published images of a drone attack on a target in Nahariya, which was likely a telecommunications center or a cell phone transmission station. The resistance movement says its ongoing operations are in support of the Palestinian people and in defense of Lebanon. Israel presses ahead with its aggression against Lebanon, leaving more civilians dead and injured across the Arab country. At least three people lost their lives in a fresh airstrike on the town of Deir al-Zahrani in the Nabatea region of southern Lebanon. Rescue crews are reportedly searching for survivors under the rubble of the bombed-out building. Separately, a Lebanese soldier was fatally shot by Israeli troops in the Al-Amaria area of Mount Lebanon while he was driving a motorcycle. Meanwhile, the Israeli army has issued fresh evacuation orders for several Lebanese villages. In one of the deadliest Israeli attacks Nearly 20 civilians were killed in the eastern city of Baalbek. More than 1 year of Israeli aggression against Lebanon has left over 2,800 people dead and nearly 13,000 others injured. Over the past weeks, the Israeli regime has targeted the positions of the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, UNIFIL, for several times, injuring a number of peacekeepers. The UN has reported that its peacekeeping mission in Lebanon has experienced over 30 incidents involving the Israeli army, some of which were deliberate. According to the authorities in Beirut,